right. So, first, we want to thank Facebook for saving all these pictures. Because if I hadn't posted them, they would all be gone. My phone, I bought a nice, huge memory card to go to on the trip. And the memory got corrupted when I got back. So, thank you, Facebook. But pretty much most of what I'm going to be covering tonight is about 8 months worth of just life. It stays pretty focused, and a few strings kind of tie in together from beginning to end. Starting about, is that too hot? Is that good? Starting about March of this year, we hear Sydney talk about it, and I've heard my dad talk about it too, is that one moment in your life, that one moment you can look back to in your relationship with Christ, and you know this was the changing point, this was the turning point in my life. It went from being my pastor's God or my father's God to this is my God, this is my faith and my walk. And for me, that was in March. In March, up to that point, I hadn't been like off the rails doing anything crazy like that, but there was no focus to my life. Nothing was really important to me. I kind of found a lull after I finished baseball in college, and then I kind of moved on to an acting career that I didn't really know how to take off, and that's what I wanted to do as a career. With that as a focus, there was really nothing going on. And I ended up, got onto American Ninja Warrior. I failed, fell toward the very end, didn't move on. And that kind of moved me to a point of vulnerability that I could just kind of quiet down and listen to God. And that was where that audible voice, that spoken voice back happened for me. And from that point forward, I kind of had a more of a focus in my walk, which gave focus to a lot of other aspects of my life as well. It took importance off of them, is that it wasn't so much about what am I going to do to further my career? What am I going to do to make this next step forward? It was, what am I going to do to further my walk with Christ, to get a bit more presence with the Father? And in that, everything else became easier. I wasn't having to worry about, hey, I haven't gotten my week booked up this week. I don't have next week booked up already, but that was okay. And from there, it led into Jeff being back from the Philippines, kind of all at that same time. Sonny and Jeremy started texting me and got me to come back to life group, so it was just kind of a bunch of things all rolled in together. And then right after that, we had the crusade. So I mean, it was literally everything lined up as I was turning back. And then I was being strengthened and equipped, and then the logical next step in my mind was, well, Jeff's back, he needs help, I'll go. I'm young enough, and I don't have a family, I'm more or less free of a career because I make my own schedule with it, so I was like, hey, I can go, I'll go. And thank you, God, for facilitating the financials for that to make it happen, and I went. And just want to kind of lead in, that was kind of the lead in to all this, and then I just want to kind of go over some stuff from the trip itself. And a lot of the questions I've gotten about the trip is, what was the difference between going for a month or more? Like, Jeff is living there, I went for a month, versus going for a week or 2 weeks. And the biggest difference on that is, when you're going for that relief mission or the short-term mission, you have basically every day booked up and scheduled for you. You have a pastor's or a church that's there. They have your schedule lined up. You're literally there for this specific reason. And that can be great, but it can also be constraining if you have other things in the community that you want to be able to get out to do. And that's where the long-term missions really, really, really help out, is for Jeff, when he's down there, there are a lot of the pastors in third world countries have started to realize that Americans want to go places, they want to feel good. And it's also created almost created a sort of missionary tourism. and they're capitalizing on that a lot of times. But that doesn't mean there isn't true need in those areas. It's just the same as we have here. There are certain people that are taking advantage of something that's going on. So what Jeff's been able to do and what Danny and Angel Tate have been able to do is get away from those mission tourist pastors and churches and actually get into the community. Jeff literally works with a family in the community that owns most of the land the Sabanian tribe live in. And that family, each of them speak probably 7 languages. So everywhere we go, they're with us. One, to make sure we're not doing anything too stupid, because Jeff and I tend to do that. But also, we can communicate with literally everyone we come in contact with there, and that alone is such a huge blessing for Jeff, especially because he's living there 24/7. And that was one of the biggest things, being with him and Danny, him and Angel. They're 3 of maybe 15 non-Filipino people that live in a city of over 1,000. So in Sindangan and the surrounding area, there's over 100,000 people, and there are 15 foreigners. So that alone can be a little bit overwhelming. And so that's where it really, really comes in on our end at home, and I fail at this miserably, is communication with them. And since I've been back, I've talked to Jeff a few times, but not as much as I should have. And that really is going to be the key, and the best way that we can support him as a family and as a church is to just shoot him a message on Facebook Messenger to him, because that's the best way to contact while he's there. Just realize it's a 12-hour time difference, so it might be difficult going back and forth there. But, I mean, that's really the biggest thing, is just being able to get out to learn people's lives, to literally be in the community and learn that most of them are fishermen. Most of the men are fishermen. If fish are out of season, they don't eat. They don't have food to feed their families. So that's how it is. But also, I don't know where the pictures are in, but I also came across a big mentality when I got back. Was a lot of people thought that people in the Philippines were miserable, that they weren't happy, but that's really not the case. Best example, you don't have a Walmart to go down the street to grab stuff. It's not necessarily a whether or not you have the money to go buy something. There's nothing to go buy. Everything that they have in town or in the village is grown there in the town. Nothing gets trucked in. If it were, there's no preservatives. It would go bad before it got there. So that's the biggest thing, is it's not necessarily getting money to the place. It's helping facilitate resources. And that's one of the things that we're able to do with Jeff's outreach in Campo Dos up on the mountain. The outreach in Campo Dos is about $600 a month. And that's literally that's food. It's chicken, rice, cookies, snacks and stuff for the outreach for the kids doing the games and everything like that. And paying the motorcycle driver to help us get it up the mountain. So that's a good segue into the outreach itself. With Jeff, the outreach that he does every month, the outreach is on Saturday. And we start getting ready for that on Tuesday. We'll have a meeting with the team. It's usually a team of 7 to 9, plus Jeff. And we'll have a meeting, go over, I went through an outline of it. I'm not going to go through all that just to save time. But, I mean, literally we go through everything. Is it how many kids are we expecting this month? How many kids of what age ranges are we expecting? Because with that, it's just like Cindy, when you're planning Bible school, you have all your classes, you have different age ranges and everything. So that all comes into play month to do it all over again. And it's a lot of work, but it's worth it. I mean, once you get up into the village, up in the mountains, you get everything up there, you spent your 2 days hauling stuff and people and everything, you get there, and everyone within about 7 miles comes in to the village proper and has the outreach with us. So it'll scroll. Oh, there we go. Perfect timing. This was the end of our outreach with Jeff. I think it was the second week I was there. And we had 147 kids from 2, 3, up through about 13. And, I mean, we had about a 20-minute lesson that was spoken completely through interpreters. And they go through songs, go through, literally, again, everything we would do at a Bible school. And this is going on a year that Jeff's been doing these outreaches. So most of the kids actually know not hymns, but the Bible school songs, stuff like that. And, I mean, they're singing along with it better than I can. And they're doing it in English. So they're learning English through the gospel as well as through school, because, I mean, that's one of the main things Jeff is pushing to do in Campados especially is continue education. They have an elementary school there, but after that, they have to move into Sindangan, which to us, thinking, oh, that's 11 miles away. That's here to Tallapoosa. But for them, it's up a mountain like that. Cars don't work on that. Couldn't afford a car anyway. But it's stuff like that. We want to do a boarding house in town so we can get 5, 6, 15, 20, 30, 80 kids and have them come to school. Because literally a lot of the people in the Philippines that take nursing jobs or home care jobs, they're moving from there out into places like Dubai or Saudi Arabia, to all these places with they just have huge amounts of money, and they go in, they're either carrying a sense of, hopefully what we're instilling them, a sense of faith and a sense of grounding in the Lord, and they can carry that into these areas that Americans can't go to. Like, we can't walk into Saudi Arabia, and they can. So they can literally carry the gospel to places that we're not even allowed to go to, and we can equip them for that there in Campados. And so that's possibly one of the most far-reaching and powerful effects of what Jeff's doing there. But we also don't want, looking in the future is great, but just for right now, that's something that those kids have each month to look forward to. That's just a break away from what they're used to. And that alone, to me, that was worth the trip. It's just being able to see, I was probably going through it, but there was one of the kids that was up there. He got my phone, and he spent about 10 minutes going around taking pictures with everyone, and he never had anything other than a smile on his face. I don't know what kind of food he gets other than when we were there, but I never saw him when he wasn't smiling. And I went up into Campados probably 8 or 9 times, and every time I went, he met me as I came in on the motorcycle, and he was smiling, happy to see us. And, I mean, that alone, that made the trip worth it. And that's just on top of everything else. Got me getting all emotional. Where'd you go? All right, so this is, I'm going to do an open forum type situation, what I've been doing recently. I had a situation that happened, something that you might expect on a mission trip or just anywhere else. When we were in Campados, there was a mother that came up to, it was the head of the Dagandong family, and she asked him, she told him, look, my son has a fever. He hasn't been out of bed in 2 or 3 days, and we don't know what to do. Can you do anything for him? And so he told us, so immediately we go in, we pray for him right there on the spot, and I don't know if he was healed on the spot or not. He didn't wake up, but from that, one of the family was with us was a trained nurse, and he was a home care specialist, and between him and my medical bag, we had everything we needed to treat him with Western medicine. I did that, and after the fact, I started beating myself up about it, and I was wondering, did I do that because I didn't have faith that he would be healed or did I do that because I was the answer to my own prayer? Because in my medical bag, I literally had what he needed to treat his symptoms and to make him better. So at that point, am I the answer to my own prayer, or do I have a lack of faith that God won't work when I pray? And that was an interesting conundrum that I kind of came into my mind after that, and I was just wondering, and I thought it would be a good kind of open topic, just kind of, because I've had stuff like that happen before at home, and I didn't really, or basically I had the same thought process on it, and I was just wondering, anybody else have any thoughts on it, ideas, or a situation like that that had come up?
So often we are the answer to our prayer or somebody else's prayer. You know, they're like the moms, like, God, my kid's sick. If she was a believer, I'm sure she was already praying for her child before y'all got there, if he'd been sick for several days and all that. Well, y'all show up, y'all pray for him, but then you have the Western medicine that you can treat him with also. So I don't necessarily look at that as a lack of faith, as a practical application of God putting you in that position at that moment in time to minister to the kid. So, you know, that's kind of my viewpoint on it. Anybody else?
And that was more or less the conclusion I came to with it. I mean, we had, between myself, my family, and the church, and you guys supporting me, we spent $2,000 to get me over there. So that was I thought it was a pretty solid answer to a prayer for the kid.
Look at James, in the book of James, and he talks about, you know, what we call,
when you come in and we're, you know, if someone is hungry, we can look at them and say, man, I'll pray for you and all that stuff. But if you got food, feed them. You know, James says, if somebody is needing clothing, give them a coat. And take care of those practical needs, and that's supernatural when it comes into somebody's life. So, you know, I don't think that's, if you will, dumbing down our faith and saying, well, you're just trying to be natural instead of practical instead of supernatural. But you being in that spot, you, God prompting in your heart to fly all the way around the world and go up and minister to those people up there, that's supernatural in itself. So, you know.
I mean, that was, and I did get back in touch with him after that, and the kid got better. He the fever went away. He was up running around. He was perfectly fine. So, whichever side of the fence you lean on, it ended up working out okay. So, the right decision was made. From that, I just want to kind of segue from the mission itself to getting coming back home, and coming back home kind of presented more difficulty for me than actually going, or the decision to go, mainly because of the Detroit airport. But in all seriousness, I like coming back from that. I spent an entire month that I had a drive in both my natural life and supernatural life in my walk. I was constantly looking for who's somebody I can talk to, what's a situation I can pray over, what's a situation that I can affect while I'm here in a positive way. Whether I was out at the market buying fruit or riding the motorcycle down the street going to buy a new knife. I mean, literally, whatever it was, or whoever it was, I was looking for something that I could do to further the kingdom, because I went halfway around the world, spent a lot of money on it. When I got back, that intentionality completely went out the window. And after that happened, I started, it got the double whammy of me beating myself up over it and me not being intentional in my walk. So then things started kind of snowballing. And Terry, thank you. You caught me as I was going down the hill on that, literally the week after I got back. And you talked to me right here and you said, Micah, this is the same thing that happened to other people that from our church that went on missions and came back. It's the same thing that happened is you start getting frustrated. You feel like you can't talk to anybody. you feel like you're isolated and not necessarily left out, but almost like you can't talk to other people about it because they weren't there, which is, it's silly. And but that's an attack that happens, and it was something that even after you talked to me about it, I still felt myself kind of falling back into that, and it was interesting. It wasn't anything that I really expected to happen afterward, and I spent probably another 2 weeks really battling it before it kind of let up, and I really opened back up and started talking to everybody again. And after that, it has been gone, so that battle is won. But moving forward from that, after I covered that and I started being intentional again, paying attention to what I was doing, having a reason to look for reasons to talk to people, I got a random TV show casting. These are literally things that I send out 10, 15, 20 a day, that sending out submission stuff. So that's literally what you do. You get maybe 5% to 10% of the castings that you send out for as an actor, and that's just how it works. But this one was for a faith-based television show, which first one I've ever seen, and ended up going in. Audition went really well. Everybody worked well together. So well, in fact, they changed the format of the show from 4 to 10 people, cast members. And this was a project that was the idea of Crystal Smith 4 weeks ago. And then it's greenlit to air in December. That doesn't happen, like, ever. It doesn't happen. And it's for a faith-based entertainment commentary show, which, again, doesn't happen. So it's a whole series of events that kind of line up together, and it's a platform that makes it possible to reach both a secular and a faith-based community, and it's a platform that can help... it can help in a lot of ways. I mean, other than just getting the gospel on mainstream TV and getting a faith perspective on general discussion, it also allows a platform for me personally to get Salt and Light Ministries out, and literally all Jeff needs is about $1,000 a month, and he's fully funded on top of what he's got. About $1,000 more a month, and he would be completely funded. And this is a way that might happen. So that's another prayer that has been answered that I didn't really have anything to do with, other than the same thing I'd been doing, clicking buttons for the last 2 or 3 years. So for the last 8 months from that decision in March, or that, not decision, but, okay, decision in March, through now, just kind of everything that's happened, everything, Sydney, like you've been saying, is just keep saying yes. And it's literally all about just saying yes. I mean, just being willing to not have to look at every situation saying, does this make perfect sense for me? Does this make logical financial sense? Because a lot of the time, no. And if I didn't have a honestly, if I didn't have that safety net of my family, I probably wouldn't be able to do the things the way I've done them. So for that, I say thank you, and thank you 1,000 times over again. But with that in place, being able to take situations like leaving the country for a month and going to the Philippines and letting that be possible, it's something that changed your life. If you do get the chance, if you ever do get the chance to go somewhere and literally just carry the gospel with you and help people, just spend time from your life to make someone else's better. And I mean, you really can't beat that. Uh, One last thing from there before I go. One of the things that really stood out to me about their culture, kind of as a mirror to ours, both secular and the church, they were a lot closer. It's partially because of it's necessary. You have to have your neighbors to help you there. If you have a construction project, there's no one to go hire a team of builders to come do it. You do it yourself. You have your neighbors help you, your friends help you. And they carry that mentality into their church so that literally everyone who is in their church is a family. They're treated as family. They still have godparents for every kid that comes to the church. And it's something that seeing that level of family in the church reminded me of home, of here. And we do have that. And I'm extremely thankful for that, but most American churches don't. And it's part of an industrialized church culture that America has kind of fostered with the mega churches and other things like that, that are not only detrimental to the churchgoers in the setting, but everyone outside of it looking in sees that and just says, hypocrite, hypocrite, hypocrite. So that kind of started me on a path of thinking that what can we do as one church in Bremen to affect the American church on a national scale? And physically, there's not anything that we can do, really. It's got to be God. I mean, all we can do is seek His presence. All we can do is trying to move in closer and do everything that we are given to the best of our ability. And beyond that, it's up to Him. I mean, that's really it. And if you take anything out of this, it's don't ever let the quality of your yes slip. Because just saying yes might not be enough. If it's yeah, I'll go, but I'm not going to like it, then might as well say no and not do it, because somebody else is going to do it better than you did. So let it be intentional and literally do everything as if you're doing it for God. That's it. Oh yeah. Yeah. I mean, I've had people asking me stuff over the last couple months. I think I've answered a few things. When I was there, we didn't have it yet, but we were in the process of setting it up. So there is a dentist that has a clinic in town and a doctor that have a clinic in town that Jeff is friends with. And both of them already said that they're on board to go and do it. The barangay captain, barangay is like counties, kind of. But the barangay captain has already got a multi-purpose building under construction. So once that building goes up, we will be able to use it. So we don't actually have to build an outreach building anymore. But once that multi-purpose building is up, that'll be the dental and medical clinics. And I think he might be planning on trying to get at least a make-do medical clinic, basically, which is like medicines and stuff like that, up until then, until that building is built.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It'll filter through at some point. The school building that you can kind of see, there's a sign for it. Actually, go back to where that one. The yellow building there is one of the school buildings. The multi-purpose outreach will be up on a hill that way. So just on the other side of this road. But yeah, once that's built, it'll be, I believe Jeff had talked about alternating months. Dental 1 month, medical the next, and that would be 2 weeks separated from the outreach itself. So every 2 weeks going into Campo Dos for outreach. While we were in Cappadocia, nothing ever actually happened. But when we came in Friday night, they came in with us Friday night, and there's actually a barracks. I think there's a picture of the barracks in there somewhere, too. But there's a barracks that's about a quarter mile away from Cappadocia, and they stayed there at night, and they might have even had one of the two of them on an alternating watch on us because they were there before I got up, and I got up at 6:30. No, not there. The only time we were ever in danger, there was an execution that happened about 15 feet away from me and Danny and Angel, but it was while we were on motorcycles, and even then we were still never in danger. Do we have time for me to explain the situation around it, or? Okay. So what's going on right now in the Philippines is basically a war between the government and militant groups and drug cartels. On Mindanao, the island that Jeff is on, it's the southernmost of the main three islands, and Mindanao was where they had all kind of moved down to and were holding out against the Philippine army. And they pushed them about 50 to 100 kilometers south of where Sindangan is. So in Sindangan is perfectly fine, but the drug cartels, drug dealers, and not so much the Muslim Jews, mainly just the cartels and dealers in the area, everyone knows who they are. They make no secret about it at all. And what's happening is the president has said all drug lords and cartel leaders, either turn yourself in or I'm going to kill you. And he has a list of their names, like all of them. And that's basically what he's done. There's like 600,000 people that turned themselves in, and going on like a couple thousand that are dead. But that's what one of those was. It was a guy that had turned himself in, and his nephew was still running the cartel. The nephew got executed, and then the uncle started speaking out and causing trouble, and he was assassinated as he came out of a restaurant. So, I mean, it was a 22, we could tell from the sound, it was a 22 bullet, and it was, like, right on him. So there was no danger of us getting shot. Immediately afterward, a truck with six military special service came in, picked up the body, left, and controlled the scene. So there was never any danger to us. It was just you don't typically see someone get shot 15 feet away from you. But yeah, that was the only, other than like being on the edge of on a motorcycle.
Does Jeff feel like the new president and kind of his antagonistic approach toward the U.S., mm-hmm. is that going to affect him and his ability to minister down there any, or does he feel confident things will continue to be good and go?
Yeah. At the moment, it seems like everything's still going to be fine. If things continue to go the way they are right now with the new presidential staff, it seems to be smoothing over. Before, President Duterte had been talking about completely pulling away from the U.S., making U.S. citizens apply for visas to come over, and getting closer to China and Russia, but it seems like that's kind of slowed down since the election. But, I mean, with it, the visa thing really wouldn't even affect Jeff as much because he's already having to apply for visas anyway to do it to his year in 2 years. So from that regard, should still be perfectly fine. Anything else? Sir? We want to kill some more time. We can talk about why I started talking with microphones and stuff. When Sonny and Jeremy asked me to come to the life group, and once we were there and kind of turned into an open forum discussion, it felt a lot like old youth classes where we'd kind of open up and start throwing things back and forth. And it reminded me of a time it would have been about 10 years ago, maybe 12. I was sitting right back there, and Jeremy was up here and said he had a word that there was somebody in the house that was meant to be not necessarily a pastor, but a speaker. Help me out here. So, anyway, I felt like it was me. I came forward, and he prayed with me, and several other people prayed with me then, and I didn't really know what it was at the time. I didn't really know the gravity of it at the time. But when that kind of came back to me there at the life group and everything else that was going on, it just kind of felt right to accept that. And I shared with the life group with that. And, I mean, it literally seemed like everything that I had been led into throughout my life had kind of been equipping me for this. I mean, training, going to school for video game design and then ended up changing to acting. It's not really a linear course. And that definitely equipped me and trained me to be able to stand in front of people and talk effectively. And I'm really thankful for that. No matter what decisions I made through life, basically, no matter whether it was the proper decision or my flesh making a decision, God was able to turn that and get me in the right place to ultimately do the work that I'm here to do. So, thank you, God. You're awesome. I don't have anything else unless there's any more questions. Oh, yeah, hey, here's Jeff's truck. And, yes, there is lots of hunting. Yeah, this is the where we sent money to him last week. This is the truck he was able to get. I haven't asked him exactly on numbers yet. I know that it was listed higher than what we sent, and he was able to talk them down to exactly what we sent. So that worked out perfectly. And now no one has the danger of falling off the side of a cliff or dropping any chickens or anything like that. Everything. If it is meat, they'll. Yeah, I heard someone say spiders. You're not lying. I mean they eat. There was a species of monkey in Campados that is almost extinct now because they eat them. I was actually given that before they told me it was monkey, and it actually kind of tasted pretty good. I'm not gonna lie. Almost kind of like pork. It tasted more like pork than chicken, oddly enough. But yeah, I mean, there's a monkey, they'll hunt with a bow, all kinds of wild pig. There's wild pig all over the place, and they'll either hunt and kill or catch and keep and raise. Oh, yeah, all kinds of insects. Heck no. They fight spiders, too. There's one of the spiders that's up in the mountains. They'll catch them. You want to get them as big as you can, and they'll keep them in, like, matchboxes. And the kids will do this. Cockfighting is legal. So adults, adults will still do spider fighting some, but cockfighting is still really big. But kids will do spider fighting, and they'll bet, like, a peso at a time on which spider is going to win. They put it up on a stick, and they hang down on a thread, and they box each other, and one of the spiders falls off. So that was kind of interesting. I saw that while we were up on one of the outreaches at Campados. Lots of fishing. You'd love that. Lots of fishing. But fishing poles were at a premium in Sindangan. Just because, I mean, synthetic materials don't really come over much, just because it's insanely expensive to ship from over here. And most of Western goods like that don't leave major cities, like Manila or Cebu or a place like that. They don't make it down into the more rural area, so when someone does get something like a fly rod, it's like, oh, it's gold. Cane or hand line. There was a guy that was out next to Danny and Angel have the outreach that's there in town on the coast, and there was a guy. He was there almost every day I went out there. He was out on a raft, kind of in the shallows, out in the surf, and he was handlining. He was running a net off to one side and handlining the other side. Because with the, I mean, literally, fish runs their economy. Fish and pork, or fish, pork, and rice. But literally, you'll go out to pretty much any of the beaches in town, and if you go right around noon, they'll just have tables out. I mean, geez, tennis court sized. Tennis court sized area, just tables laid out with fish drying on it. They do sun baked dried fish, and that'll keep for a month at a time. People will literally do like a half a fish for a meal. And these, I'm not talking big fish, there's like this. And like a half a fish on a loaf of bread, and that's your meal for the day. Yeah. It is. They are from Bowden.
Mm-hmm.
They had their outreach was somewhere else. I can't remember. Might have been Dapitan, one of the other cities close-ish to Sandongan, and they met Jeff. They talked to him while they were over there. I can't remember which city they were in when they met him, but they ended up moving the outreach down to Sandongan. And they just came to meet with Jeff, to hang out with him one weekend. They're like, oh, we love it here. And they felt the same call he did, and they literally picked up everything again and moved to Sandongan and set up the new outreach. And in that, now Jeff has a new house, because they ended up getting a house that has like 8 rooms for very, 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 very low rent for the area anyway. And Jeff moved in there, and they're looking at being able to board some of the kids there in the house with them. So that was another answered prayer. If we have a few more minutes, unless you have something you want to do.
I just want to add one thing.
All right.
One thing that I take away from Micah coming up and sharing and all of that, and where he is and everything, is really want to encourage you, just give yourself to the moment that you're in. Because in March, Micah gave himself to the moment where he was open and vulnerable to God, to come in and speak to him. And he began to talk about how things progressed, you know, everything lined up. Things don't line up unless you give yourself to the moment. And that's one thing that I feel like we miss God in a lot, is we don't give ourselves to the moment, because we're thinking about either what's behind us or something out in the future. And so we don't capitalize the moment that we're in. And, you know, whether it's God speaking for us to go, or us saying yes, you know, and going, or once we get there, you know, one reason that you felt, and anybody that's done any mission work, they feel when they go, they're like, you know, I mean, it's just like the most awesome and fulfilling thing, because you're totally giving yourself to kingdom work. You know, when you were in Guatemala, Randy, it was just totally, you know, we were focused on kingdom life, and we weren't worried about anything else. And it just, that's rich. And if we'll learn to give ourselves to the moment, wherever we are, you know, and what's in front of us and everything, you know, that's when we can clearly God, and we can clearly be used of God. I just want to encourage y'all. Yeah, this, I don't know. Okay, all right. Just have me a different one for Sunday, all right? I know you're not going to be here, because I'll be done throwing this one through the window. Just to really, and you guys right now, see, that's the thing with y'all. Y'all were at the Blake House for 10 months, or if you stay for longer, but give yourself to that moment. Give yourself to that 10 months. And, you know, your focus can't be what's here, and it can't be, boy, I can't wait till I get out and I'm going to do this. Because if you do that, then you're going to miss what God's wanting to say and do in your life. You know, yeah, you'll miss a deer season. But That's all right. You know what? They'll just be bigger next year, you know, next November when you're out there and, you know, out there in Rockmart chasing the deer. They'll just be bigger next year. And what a lot of times we'll look at what we're missing or what's not happening in our life, and we lose the moment of what God's wanting to do right then or what God's wanting to set up. And that's one thing that in Micah making himself available now, a lot of stuff is really falling into place in his life. And that's because you gave yourself to these moments, these series of moments, and that allowed God. It didn't just allow God, it attracted God. And I think that's big. The Bill Johnson quote on hope. Hope is the joyful anticipation of goodness which attracts the promises of God. And when we come in and we give ourselves to the moment and we make ourselves available or do these things, that not only does that facilitate, but it attracts. And I think that's huge. We wonder why stuff isn't happening in our life. Maybe we're not putting ourselves in a place where it attracts, the activity of God, kingdom activity, you know, because that's a big thing. So that's just one thing that I took away from Micah tonight, is us just totally giving ourselves to the moment that we're in. I mean, we see it with raising kids, you know. I tell pregnant ladies when they're going through the pregnancy, I say, you know, and it's everything about a pregnancy isn't great, but it's 9 months of amazing. This child is in my womb and a part of me for 9 months. And, I tell people, I say, give yourself to that. Embrace that, you know. And I know it's hard sometimes when you got heartburn, make you want to pull your hair out or hug in a toilet or something. But that's true in every area of life. So just totally give yourself to that. Anybody got anything else? Anything else? Yeah, and one thing that's challenging for us is, especially as we get older and more ingrained in things, we feel like that we're so attached to so much stuff that I'm not free to do things. You know, Micah said it's perfect timing for me because I'm, 24. You ain't 20. Are you really just 20? You're not 20. Are you okay? 24 years old, and I don't have a wife and kids and all of that stuff. And so I'm free to do whatever. And I think a lot of times we restrict what God can do in our life because we feel like we're tethered to too many things. And I think sometimes God wants to, we remove our tether from our family or anything like that, but maybe our family needs to be untethered from things so we can all say yes to different stuff in our life. So... I agree, definitely. Anybody else? Anything else? All right, let's stand to our feet. I tell you what, let's do. We're early tonight. Let's spend a little bit of time, maybe in the altar, praying for Jeff and the ministry over there, the couple from Bowden. Praying for them in the ministry over there, it's a huge blessing that we were able to get Jeff the truck, and so he could use that. But the next step is the extra funding coming in, $1,000 a month, so that he can do an extra outreach every month and help facilitate with the medical and the dental and all that. So maybe we just need to spend a little bit of time in prayer and pray for him and the ministry over there and just whatever else is going on in your life. So, Jeffrey, if you'll catch some praise and worship music, we'll just open the altar up and come on in and just engage the Lord.